Pickaxe.
We always recommend Shopify. It took us from an idea to a real business. We got set up, I think, in less than a day. With very little effort, we could just focus on the supply chains and the product development. Shopify gives us the ability to customize without the complexity. We can change something without introducing fragility or having to pay a developer. We're Thirsty Turtle, and we leveled up our business with Shopify.
Start your free trial at shopify.com/au.
Jetzt nur du, dein Podcast und eine leckere Auszeit. Ab zu Aldi Nord. Für 2,99 € bringst du deine Mittagspause mit Sushi ins Rollen. Lecker. Und für 1,99 € gönnst du dir danach noch eine kleine Eiszeit. Bei Aldi Nord findest du immer das Passende. Klingt gut? Dann probier die Snacktime Sushi Box ab 205 Gramm für nur 2,99 € oder Mucki Sandwich Eis je 8 Stück für nur 1,99 €. Das ist Gutes für alle zum Aldi-Preis. Jetzt in deiner Filiale. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Triforce podcast. It's been a while, and it's Lewis's fault.
Whoa.
Yeah, he was away on vacation, and he had to, like, go do some skiing or something. I don't know.
I prefer Lewis is to blame. Rather than it's Lewis's fault.
It's all Lewis's fault.
Well, you'd rather be blamed than be at fault.
Yeah,
what's the difference?
Yeah. I don't know. I just like hearing the word and Lewis is to blame. I just like that. My ass hurts and Lewis is to blame.
Lewis is to blame.
I think it sounds less childish than it's so-and-so's fault. Like, if you say it's his fault, it sounds like something my five-year-old would say.
It does. It's like, he did it. Wasn't me.
It's all down to Lewis.
Yeah.
Lewis cucked us for like 2 weeks.
First in Vancouver, and then with the podcast. How was Vancouver? Talk it up.
Have you guys ever experienced the joys of business class air travel?
Oh, I have.
My goodness.
One time.
Yeah. One time for me as well. Just once.
I say once. It was there and back.
Whoa.
It was the same.
Yeah.
The first time I've ever been business, and it was... Or anything other than premium economy, which I think is pretty premium usually. Very
no
premium.
More. No but more no, do I, you think you're premium.
You've got to get on Hat Films' level, man. Like, they travel business everywhere
I
they go.
I know they do. Six,
I don't even know
crazy.
How they manage to do it. Like, they're not even, like, that big or anything. They're just,
it's like their kind of retainer or whatever. It's like
I
on,
guess
their,
so.
It's on
yeah.
their show runner. What's it called?
I think they
when,
say
like, metal bands have a
yeah. waive our fee, but just upgrade us to business class. So that
rider. That's pretty much all they want.
A rider.
A rider. That's what it is. And I guess that works makes sense because they're riding on the plane. So no, it was great. We went to the plane got delayed for 5 hours. We went to Whistler. They swapped the plane out for a bigger plane.
Nice.
And there were not enough seats in premium economy, so we all got upgraded to business. We were all sitting in different places, which was great because I didn't have to sit with Duncan and Chin for the whole time. And I got about 4 hours sleep, which was absolutely heavenly, because then when we got to Whistler, up at the top of the mountains in Canada, we woke up really early because of jet lag, and we went straight out and we skied, and it was glorious. It was great.
Nice. Enjoyed you guys it. Finally went on your skiing trip, the one that like Shin has been talking about for 3 years solid.
That's exactly right. We
finally did it.
Managed to get out onto slopes for 2 days, and Duncan, poor old Duncan, he couldn't, never been before.
Right.
And just spent the whole time falling on his ass. I've got this glorious picture on my phone of him face
planting.
Did
you have sore legs after you were done skiing and snowboarding?
I didn't, actually, because I've been going to the old gym.
Oh,
and so
of course.
Looking after myself.
The gym-a-roo, yeah.
So I went to the gym yesterday, saw my personal trainer. Yeah, I got a little story. Got a little story about
it.
Oh,
Jesus.
Okay, let's hear it.
Here it comes.
So basically, you know, go in there and I get there at like, you know, normal time, 9 o'clock. And
did you just walk in and you say, "Hey, what's up, dick face? I'm back from my vacation that I it was a really lavish one too. I bet you've never been on one of those." Is that like your opening thing to him?
Yeah, pretty much. Just like just
I was
a
just
really
trying
cocky,
to think of like the most inappropriate thing you could say to
the
him.
The really and, cocky like nod and wink. You know,
right. Oh, okay. Yeah. Good.
And
yeah.
Of course, he's chatting away with this young-looking blonde girl in a tight tracksuit or whatever.
Right.
And I was like, okay. And so then, we start working out and stuff. And he says, I tore one of my glutes.
Right.
Wow. Did he request that you rub his glute better?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh. And then,
did you have to massage his torn glute?
So I said, "Did you get that from all the gay sex?"
You didn't.
Yeah, I did. You did not. There's no fucking way you did.
I did.
No, you didn't.
Okay. There's no way you said
You're a functioning human being, Lewis. I don't believe this story right off the bat.
Now, yeah. What had happened at like 5 minutes before that?
This sounds so outlandish. You have to, like, you have to record it to prove it now.
This is genuinely true. And then what happened 5 minutes before that was a woman had like approached us, okay, like way too old to look like she's being in the gym. And she was like, a blonde woman wearing like a sort of baggy tracksuit. And she said, "Do you know anything about hands?" to my trainer, to David. Yeah. And David was like, "What do you mean?" And she said, "Well, I've got this lump on my hand and it really hurts when I lift weights and stuff." And he was like, "Oh, well, you might have fractured your little bone in your wrist. You need to be careful with that. So go and have an x-ray." And she was like, "Okay, thanks for the tip." And she
it's
went
probably
off.
A tendon.
So when I said to him, you know, "Is that from all the gay sex you've been having?" after he told me about his torn butt muscle.
Yeah.
He said, "I have a girlfriend, you know, you met her earlier." And I said, "You're going out with that old woman."
You
there's no fucking way. This is all in your fucking dreams, man. There's no way you said this stuff to this guy. Like, and you don't even know him. How many times have you been in the gym now? Can we get four, five times maybe?
I've been like,
you're not on terms with this guy where you can say this shit to him.
We are now fine. He cracked a smile and he was like, "No, the girl earlier." And then we had a little laugh about it and it was fine. It was actually fine. Okay.
God damn. You know how he tore a glute? Because when he's been working with you, he has to go and work out so fucking hard to get all his anger out to work with the next person. He's tearing glutes.
He probably fucking strangles his girlfriend like every goddamn day and then screams your name at the same time.
She asked for that though. So it's fine. That's the thing. You know, don't ever do that, by the way. I think that's really dangerous. I see this though.
What? Tear your butt? Butt muscle?
No, choking like your girlfriend.
Oh, right, like, of course.
I saw this whole string of like memes about on Imgur, and it was just all of it was just about like women saying "choke me" and stuff. I was like, Jesus, do people do whatever you want in your own bedrooms, but be careful out there, folks.
The thing is, you know what? You shouldn't do whatever you want in your own bedroom, because what if you wanted to murder someone? Don't do that. Don't do anything against the law in your own bedroom.
You shouldn't really. Yeah,
don't murder people and don't choke them.
Don't choke them.
That's really personal. I think if you are going to murder someone, shoot them from like 300 meters away or something. Like, don't fucking choke them or stab them. That's even worse. That's messy. Yeah. Like, man, just get a sniper rifle or a hunting rifle or something and do it that way.
Oh, God, you can imagine. I mean, if I was going to get killed, I'd want it to be from a mile away. I don't even see it coming. God. Just my head just snaps and it's all over. Rather than someone up close can smell their breath as they're hunched over me, strangling the life out of me. It'll fucking suck.
If I'm going to go, I just want to be vaporized. Like,
vaporized?
I don't even want to know where it comes from. I want it to be like instantaneous. I don't want there to be any chance that I'm going to survive with like...
You
want to
be vaped.
I want to be vaped.
Vaped.
I want to just...
I can do it.
I want to disappear into a cloud instantly. I don't want any like residual like, "Oh, he made it somehow, but... He can't use his arms or his legs ever again," or anything like that. I don't want that shit. Like, I just when I go, I want to go. I want to go big.
You don't want to come around and be in a barrel.
Yeah,
just a man that lives in a barrel full of liquid.
Yeah, yeah.
Not a glass jar. They couldn't get a jar. They're like, "There's too much of you left to fit in all the jars we've got." So we had to go with a wooden barrel with no windows. You just live in there.
Man,
now.
Same with like a really bad crash. Like if you were in a plane and it crashed in the ocean. Or like somewhere in the middle of nowhere, vaporize me at that point. I do not want to survive that, because that is even worse, I think, than dying. Like, you know, fucking having to like hold on to a piece of the wing and float to shore over the course of 2 weeks or something like that, you know, in shark infested waters, and it gets dark and cold in the Atlantic Ocean or the Pacific, I guess. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not that survivor. That's not me. Just vaporize me every time, okay? I don't want to, like, black out in fear or anything like that. I just want to be vaporized. That's all you can hope for, I think.
I was reading about this girl that fell 2 kilometers. Her plane broke up in midair. They were flying over the Amazon jungle. This is a true story. You can look this up. And it was made into a shitty movie, I believe. The plane breaks up and crashes. There's like 87 people on board. 86 of them die. She's in her seat, plummeting towards the jungle canopy in her seat, obviously thinking, well, this is it. I mean, this sucks.
There's no way she was conscious for the whole thing. The jungle canopy
broke her fall. And I mean, you know when people say you black out, I would be so terrified. I think I'd probably stay awake for that. Not everyone has a Sipsian reaction to danger where you just faint. I think a lot of people would just be going, ah, the whole way. And when there's a video of that guy who's parachuted.
Your brain is crazy, okay? Your brain does some weird stuff. And part of your brain's way of coping is to just sometimes cause you to black out.
Is the reason that you black out because you're being choked by something?
I don't think that you're getting choked during a 2 kilometer drop from a plane that's just broken up in midair.
That's just a waste of time, whoever's choking you. Like, I mean, you're clearly gonna die.
I think you got bigger fish to fry at that point.
It's like someone on fire being eaten by a shark, and you're there just choking him as well, just to make sure.
On the way down, you're like, "Oh my god, I'm gonna die. I might as well just quickly get myself off," you know. And you start choking yourself and like.
There's
wanking.
No way people think that. Like, that's the last thing on your mind. You're not feeling sexy at that point when you're
faced
with.
She crashes into the jungle canopy.
Hang on a second. Let's just carry on this. So she doesn't undo the seatbelt. She just thinks I'm gonna stick.
I mean, for one thing.
She's like fucking paralyzed with fear. Of course she doesn't undo the seatbelt. She's in the crash position, you know, like when you put your hands.
When she left the plane, I'm sure the fasten your seatbelt light was on, right? Until she sees that light come off, that seatbelt stays on. Or until she
lands. How does a plane break up in midair, though? Too much turbulence or something?
Do you think she like takes a cheeky vape or something as well? She's like, oh, well, you know, I'm outside now. There's not going to be any plane. I can finally have
she's
a quick
in free
vape.
Fall, Lewis. She's in free
Man, she's
fall.
She's screaming her head off. Like,
is she though? Or is she like,
of course
okay,
she
I'm
fucking
dead now,
is.
Resigned to it. And she's like, maybe the reason she survived was because she did choke herself off, had time to like get relaxed.
she
like vaped a bit and then she like loosened up. And then when she fell, she was really loose, and so she just bounced.
Man, it's not a fucking episode of Roadrunner where he's falling down and he busts out the picnic basket and, you know, plays the violin and stuff. Like,
she crashes
she's just screaming
into the jungle
the whole
canopy.
Time.
Yeah, she's terrified. But the jungle canopy breaks her fall. So she lands.
Right.
She starts walking and she realizes
So hang on a second. Is she stuck in a tree?
No. It just crashes through. So she's on the floor of the jungle now. She's kind of injured. She's fucked up her arm.
She's crushed like a... She like landed on a fucking bunch of monkeys or some shit.
In the fucking rainforest?
Yeah.
Fuck,
so
no
she
way.
She gets up and she finds the river. And she realizes, she knows, okay, rivers flow down to the sea.
Right.
I'm sure there's some people living by the sea at the end of this river, or maybe I'll see someone along the way.
Yeah.
So she just starts floating down the river. Like, she just floats.
In the fucking rainforest, down
a
river. There's piranhas in there.
Exactly.
You don't do that.
She had no choice.
And with a fucked up arm, too. Was she bleeding?
She was. Oh, it was getting very bad. There was maggots in it and everything like that.
Was she choking herself as well?
So she's constantly being bothered by a small Lebanese child who'd also crashed with her, who kept choking her and
badgering her about
anal
masturbating
sex.
When she, for some reason. Masturbation.
Right? So she floats
down
the
river. She's using the airplane seat as some sort of surrogate canoe. And I don't know.
They interview her after the fact and they say, what's the worst part of your whole ordeal? She's like, you know what? I could just about handle the broken arm and the free fall for 2 kilometers with the canopy breaking my fall and the piranha infested river
and
everything.
The maggots in
my
arm.
But there was this really fucking annoying guy badgering me to start masturbating the whole time I was surviving. That was the worst part. That was
so she's vaping as she goes down the river like a sort of old steamer.
Like one of those gambling ships. Climb aboard, we got poker.
Oh man.
So she finally gets to this wood shack that was sort of used for some logging or something in the Amazon, but it was abandoned. So she goes
for
in there
cocaine
and
production.
Cocaine production.
She stumbles across a cartel cocaine plant. Oh, man.
Yeah, they rescued her and she lived. It was fucking nuts.
Fuck me, man. Like, we're joking, but holy shit.
Yeah,
like,
crazy.
I hope that woman is not listening to us
I don't
talk
think
about
is.
Her right now, because that's really
If you really are, well done. That was really impressive.
Yes. Yeah, you did a good job there.
And they saved her arm. And they really saved her arm, by the way.
Not sure about the logic behind getting in the river, but still.
Well, she did, you know, she had to go past all the alligators and all that shit, but what I don't know what else, what other choice she had. Imagine just having to walk through the Amazon, dude. You'd never make
it. There's no way. I would hope that I landed in a tree and I'd stay up in the tree and I'd wait for like some people to come by, you know, like, you know, some intrepid explorers or whatever, and I'd call down. I'd say, hey, help me. My plane broke up and the canopy broke my fall. I've been up here for a year. I need some help. And that's how I would get out of the, I'd be dead, man. I wouldn't even start walking. Like, I would be so fucking scared of like everything that happened and everything that was ahead of me as well. Honestly, I think I would have died midair though. I would have blacked out and died probably.
My God. Probably. So everyone in Vancouver was like smoking weed. Right?
Yeah.
Just so you know. Duncan was obviously vaping. Everyone was vaping. Smith got a vape pen given to him by a guy who was like marketing a new series of vape pens and had this brand new, like really trendy looking vape pen. Now, you were thinking about getting a vape pen, weren't you, Sips?
Yeah. I want to get the one Smith's got because you said that he was high the whole time.
Well, here's the thing, right? So Smith's vape pen had like whatever weed liquid you get, that stuff in
liquid
it, right?
Weed, yeah.
I don't know, like THC. I don't know what it is, but it was full of that. And obviously, they couldn't like take it home or anything, so they were feeling like, "Oh, better use this up while we're here." Jeez. I don't know how much to tell, like about Hatfield's. I don't know. I don't know how much to tell about this because I don't know how comfortable. Oh, fuck it! I'm just gonna tell what happened.
He's in that kind of mood. They blew each other. Nothing can happen.
They got high and they started blowing each other everywhere.
So, no, not really. They not really. I mean, Duncan was vaping away anyway, right? And there was this one point where we were talking about it and Duncan said, literally verbatim, he said, "I vaped on a kid earlier and it was good."
What does that mean?
Well, yes. It was basically, I think he was just vaping in the, you know, releasing some extremely, ripping some fat clouds in the middle of Vancouver.
Right.
I think a child just walked through a big strawberry cloud.
Nice.
Duncan felt bad for a second and then like noticed that the kid actually quite enjoyed it. So yeah. I don't know. Anyway, Vancouver, full of people smoking weed everywhere. Weed seems like it's about to be legal. So
It is. Like in Canada, next year it's going to be like all over the country apparently. So
I don't,
I guess people are just,
I'm not a
getting ready.
Huge knowledgeable weed guy, right? That's not my forte. I don't smoke a lot of weed. I don't kind of, I never really have. I'm not one of these guys who's obsessed with it like some people are, and I'm sure it's good, for people who enjoy it, blah blah blah, whatever. I'm not an expert, okay? Anyway, I said to Smith, like, how high are you right now out of 10? And he was like, oh, about
like 11
6 6 or 7. And so he was pretty high. So he was like, let's go to this Amsterdam cafe, which is this place where they all smoke weed.
Right.
They were like, sure, let's go. And so on the way, you know, I had a few puffs of his vape pen.
His weed vape pen.
Yeah. And so did everyone else. And so we were all having like a little bit of we were all getting a little bit high. And we went to this, this Amsterdam cafe and it was like, it was a shop that was just full of bongs on one side of the room. Like a bong collection.
Were they like shishas and stuff?
Yeah.
They had, and like those pucks and everything.
It looked like a glass dildo fucking wall.
Hey, have you ever tried a shisha though? They're nice, man. They're really good.
Aren't they like 40 cigarettes in one breath or something?
It's not. It's like a tobacco. It's like a scented or flavored tobacco puck that you put
in. And
at
it's
the
really
top.
Cool because it's water filtered. So it's yeah, they're great. They're very relaxing.
It's nice. It's really nice. It's like it feels a bit like vaping, actually.
Yeah, it's very similar.
But it's like this huge, gigantic, like Middle Eastern apparatus instead of, you know, just a little trendy pen or whatever.
And the guy comes and puts the little disc.
Yeah, he puts
what
that
flavor
little,
would you like?
Thing
like,
on.
Apricot.
And, yeah.
And he goes, bonk, and puts his little disc on and starts it going and away you go. It's good.
Yeah, and it makes a cool sound when you take like a hit from it. It goes like... yeah, that's good. You'd like it, I think, Lewis. You'd like it. The whole atmosphere is really nice, too. You sit in a room like there's... Instead of tables and stuff, they just got pillows like on the ground. You just like chill out and have... you know, some falafel and
well, I mean, I heard that they were incredibly unhealthy. Like, I heard they were like way worse than cigarettes.
Oh,
like,
come on, like, there's nothing worse than cigarettes. Yeah, the shit that they put in cigarettes, fuck me, like tar and everything in there. Like, it's okay.
Well,
it's
I don't know. I'm not an expert, but I'm my body's a temple, boys. You know, so
yeah.
A little cheeky vape once in a while is okay, but I don't want to like fucking smoke on a hookah or anything. Jesus, okay. A hookah. I don't know what it's how it's pronounced. So anywho, we went to this place and it was just full of people, clearly very, very stoned, very, very chilled out people
right.
who were all very, you know, all of them were on their phones. Okay.
Yeah.
Clearly watching something from like r/ mildly interesting or whatever.
All right.
And so we got stoned and then we went to this fucking restaurant. It was nice. We went to
what restaurant did you go to? McDonald's. What'd you get? 30 chicken nuggets. Well, man, oh, if you're gonna smoke weed, that's what you got to follow up with. You gotta get like 20 cheeseburgers for 99-cent cheeseburgers or something. Like,
we basically had like the most stoner conversation ever. You know, like I think at one point I remember a couple of things. One thing that I said was lobster, because Smith ordered like macaroni cheese with lobster in. It's a classic American thing, right?
Right.
I said, lobster is prawn steak. Oh, and everyone was like, oh my God, that's the most profound thing in the world. Everyone thought that was the most profound thing anyone had ever said.
Right.
I know, that was the kind of state we were in.
You guys were smoking a vape, Smithy's vape that was given to him that had weed juice in it. This is the story.
Yes.
Right.
That's literally it.
And gotcha. Are you high right now?
No, I'm not. Okay. I'm not very well right now because of flipping flying back. You know, I always get like airplane colds.
Right. So,
you're like George Costanza. You know that. You remind me of George Costanza. Saying inappropriate things to people that Jerry would be like, George, you can't talk to them like that. I told him I don't like his face, and he's got an old girlfriend. That's you. Your relationship like with the gym guy.
Yeah,
awkward silences. Go into a place to smoke weed. It's all very, very Costanza. It's right out of his playbook.
It is very, very Costanza.
It's very, it's very, very true.
You know what? I was thinking the other day. This is when I saw a tweet that Sips has made. This is a complete change of subject, but it really made me laugh because we do this quite often. On the podcast, I've noticed.
What?
Is our references are tragically sort of out of date. So you made a reference to Smithy, I think it was something he was wearing, and you referred to him as Punky Brewster. Right? So that was a show that aired in like the mid to late 80s. And yeah. I instantly knew what you meant, but I'm thinking, like 90% of the people who watch
the
Smithy
girl,
stuff,
the girl that played Punky Brewster was Blossom, though, right?
No, or did that they was just Soleil look... Moon Frye was the girl who played Punky Brewster, and Blossom was played by, wait, don't tell me, Jesus, what was her name?
Renee Russo. No, it wasn't. It wasn't Renee Russo.
Mayim Bialik.
They look similar, though, right?
They're really completely different. Mayim Bialik is the girl. She's in Third Rock from the Sun. She's the same age as Soleil Moon Frye. Soleil Moon Frye is beautiful. Like, she's a beautiful woman.
What, the one that plays Blossom?
No, the one that plays Punky Brewster. Like, if you look at a picture of her now, she's 40. She's only slightly older than me. She is gorgeous. She's absolutely gorgeous. Mayim Bialik, not so much. But she's nice. But she's not like a looker, you know?
Okay, Punky Brewster now 2016 images. Oh, yeah, no, that's not punk. She looks a bit like Alanis Morissette, doesn't she?
Yeah, she does.
She has that Alanis Morissette look.
But I don't hate her.
Yeah.
Like, I hate Alanis Morissette.
But is she recently pregnant? There's lots of pictures here of her pregnant.
Oh, damn. Well, that's over. Yeah. She got 4 kids!
Wow.
That's why there's so many pictures of her pregnant. It's hard to take a picture of her when she's not fucking pregnant. Jesus Christ. I think it's interesting, like, I was watching The Simpsons with, I know we talk about The Simpsons a lot, but I was watching it the other day with my kids, and there were a number of references in it that, I mean, I know my kids won't get them, but I think most people who aren't in their late 30s or 40s would even get. Like, I remember watching them at the time and being confused, like, references to Steve Allen. Like, Steve Allen was a funny, like, he was a comedian in the 70s.
I know, yeah. Well, I mean, Simpson has, like, tons of references to, like, Reagan and Nixon and, like, all these, like, old-ass presidents.
But that's because the guys that were making the show were, like, our age now. And they were like, what's funny? Oh, yeah, Steve Allen. Yeah, let's joke about Steve Allen, Mad Magazine, ALF. Like, there are jokes about ALF.
ALF.
Nobody's seen ALF in, like, 20 years.
Oh,
like,
I used to watch ALF all the time, though. I fucking love that show. It was
really good. My kids would watch it now. I guarantee you they would watch ALF now, even though it's fucking awful. But I know they'd watch it.
But there's, like, certain shows that did really well over here. Like, my wife says that, like, Roseanne used to be on all the time over here. It was,
yeah,
like,
that's
it was
a great
pretty
show,
popular.
Though.
Like the Cosby Show, but I guess the Cosby Show is pretty popular, like more or less
everywhere.
It was
huge, yeah, it was huge.
Yeah, yeah, and Frasier as well. She said Frasier was just like super big over here too.
Yeah, that was big.
And Friends was really big
Friends
over here.
Friends was probably the biggest, not so much.
Seinfeld was huge in North America, but not so much in the UK.
People didn't like it. It was too American. Honestly, too American, I think. Too New York.
I don't know. I would have thought that Friends would have been as well. Friends was like fucking ultra American.
No, it's like elevator music comedy. It's like super, super appealing. Like, no, you don't even really notice it's there. It's just, my sister, by the way, is fucking obsessed with Friends. Like, she's seen every episode probably like 100 times, knows the show inside it. Yeah. And I'm like, really? Friends? Like, it's okay. It's not offensive.
If it's on, sometimes it'll occasionally make me laugh, but I would never like follow it religiously. No. Friends and Seinfeld and shows like that are just still in like massive syndication in the US. They're like on TV all the fucking time. Fresh Prince of Bel-Air as well.
Oh, God.
But do you know what?
A lot of people liked Friends that you wouldn't have thought would like it. Because to me, and this is going to sound sexist, it always seemed like more of a sort of a show that girls would be super, super into. And you know, I mean, I thought that maybe you think that was unfair. But when my wife was at university, the guy in the next room from her, she remembers one time she was walking past his bedroom when he was watching Friends, and she could hear the title music, and you know that bit.
Yeah.
He clapped along with it in his room. And
nice.
I remember thinking, all right, he wouldn't have done that with the door open. He would have been embarrassed if he clapped along to the theme of Friends.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
That was funny.
It's weird. I remember, like, I've probably said this like many times, but I remember like growing up on Thursday night, you had... It was crazy. Like primetime TV on a Thursday night, you had new Simpsons when Simpsons was like pretty good.
Yeah.
You had new Friends and then new Seinfeld. Like those three shows, huge shows, all with like new episodes on a Thursday night. Man, like if you went outside when those shows were on, it was like a ghost town. Like no, everybody was inside watching TV. Mm. Like when those shows were on, it was.
And nowadays,
we're like
I guess
back
that's
to
not
back
a thing.
Well.
That's not a thing now. Like being in at a certain time to watch a show, you just watch it on catch up. Just record
that's
it.
Yeah,
or
I guess everybody just watches it like whenever. Like I barely watch any TV now. Like I just watch stuff on the internet like all the time now.
Yeah, I do still watch regular TV with the kids. Like I'll just stick it on and we'll watch something. So we will watch there
but
are
that's
two
like
shows
kids
that we
TV,
watch.
Though, right?
No. They've actually started to get an interest in non-kids TV. Like the stuff
really?
That I, yeah,
oh,
stuff
God.
That I had no idea that they would like. For example, there's this show called something like The Repair Shop. And it's this really, really ultra gentle show. I guess it's towards dinner time or around just post dinner time. It's for old people, basically. I think it was on BBC Two.
Right.
And basically, it's a big setup. It's like all these shows. They have this house. It's got the repair shop on the outside. It's in a beautiful scenic area. It's like BBC stuff. And what happens is they've got like a guy who specializes in repairing clocks and a woman who specializes in restoring things but still making them look old. There's a guy who's like a seamster and a guy who's a carpenter. And they're
it sounds
like
something Lewis would write.
Right. They're like this vaguely, very gently wacky band. Like one of them wears a funny hat. Whoa. And people come in and they're like, I've got this old clock that my grandfather left me. It stopped working. Like, oh, we'll have a look at it. And someone came in and said, oh, this was a piano stool that I used to sit on with my grandmother. Could you restore it? Like, yeah, sure. The kids were fucking gripped. And I was like, kids, what? Are you really this? They were like, oh, we love it. Don't change the channel. They watched the whole thing, like, with rapt attention. This guy has this old clock. You could see him undoing it with a tiny screwdriver now. Oh, here are the gears and the cogs. These will be tricky, but I'll do it. And then they cut away to someone cutting up some fabric. And they were just in seventh heaven. They fucking loved it. I was really surprised.
It's weird because there's a four-year difference between my two kids. Like, my son wants... I think my son would be up for watching different stuff now.
Right.
You know, like, I don't think he necessarily would just sit around watching kids' TV all day. Like, he wants to watch stuff on YouTube. He's got this friend at school who's, like, obsessed with Five Nights at Freddy. So he comes home every day and he's like, hey, Dad, can I watch Five Nights at Freddy? I'm like, no, don't fucking watch that. Why? You don't want to watch that anyway.
Oh,
but
my
like,
God.
That is so
what?
Weird. Because
I know.
Literally, there was a girl in my daughter's class. Again, so they were, like, seven. and her oldest sister would play the game with her friends, and she would watch.
That's it.
Again, she was obsessed.
I know.
And she described the characters to my daughter, and I didn't know about this conversation. My daughter comes home with her little coloring book she's got with her, or, you know, like a sketchbook she's got with her, and I'm like, that's a character from Five Nights at Freddy's. I'm like, where the hell did you see that? She goes, oh, my friend told me about it. It was an amazing, like, she should be a fucking police sketch artist because she's never played the game, but she knew. And I was like, that's exactly what he looks like.
It was that horrible fucking creepy bear from...
Yeah.
The one that's like scares people and people scream or whatever. So like, my son doesn't know what it is. He has no idea. Like, he's never seen any videos of it on YouTube or whatever. He just has this friend at school who's got an older brother who, like, talks about it all the time. So he comes to school and he talks about it all the time and he's seen it or whatever. So my son is like, oh, can I watch Five Nights at Freddy's? Like, no, you can't really watch Five Nights at Freddy's. Like, I don't even really know who's playing that game and stuff. And, like, you don't want to waste your time watching that anyway. Watch something else sort of thing. But then we go to a toy store.
Is it properly a scary thing, or is it like a Goosebumps, or is it like a properly scary thing?
I have no fucking idea.
Have you never seen
honestly.
The game?
I know about the game, but I've never played it or seen anyone play it.
I've seen other people play it, and basically you control the security cameras and you have to try and you can close certain doors and turn on certain lights and stuff from your control desk, and all you can see is the cameras, and when you're like looking away you'll look back and the doll's moved, because the gist is it's like what was that Chuck E. Cheese, right, was the restaurant in the States, I think, and you'd go there for pizza and they had these animatronics and stuff, so the gist is you're there to mind them over the weekend or whatever, but a lot of other people have tried and obviously they've failed, so you have to try and survive Five Nights at Freddy's restaurant without the dolls killing you, right? But it is genuinely scary. Like, it's like a jump screamer, terrifying, like, kind of thing. They pop up and you die.
Okay, but listen, they have fucking toys of it now in the toy store. So we go to the toy store and he sees this stuff. And we're like, all right, you want to get something? You want to maybe get like a transformer or something? Like, you know, we took him to the toy store to get him something because he had like some vouchers that he got for his birthday from like this fucking aunt who lives in like Croatia or whatever. And so we took him and we're like, you want to get like a Star Wars guy or something? And he's like, no, look. Look what they have. Like, what? Like, looking around, there's like My Little Pony and stuff. And then I fucking see it. It's like just stupid fucking bear from Five Nights at Freddy's. Like, that's Timber or whatever his name is. My friend told me all about him. He's the best. Can I get that? I was like, no, don't fucking spend your money on. You don't even know what that is. You've never even seen it before. Like, why would you buy that? But he was like dead set on getting it. And then we had to like convince him to just like get something else, or like we took him upstairs in the toy store and we're like, oh, look at this stuff. And he's like, oh yeah, I like that. I'm going to get that instead.
It was
like
weird that it appeals to them. Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
listen, yeah. I mean, I used to watch, like, when I was a kid, you know, Doctor Who was a scary thing, and there were certain things that, you know, you watched from behind the sofa kind of thing, and it was okay. Like, a lot of kids' stuff is gross or kind of spooky, and the Goosebumps books, I mean, I'm using them as the main example, I guess, but, like, is Five Nights at Freddy's, like, are we talking about, like, adult nerds buying these toys, but they're accidentally being put in the kids' section? Or
no,
are these genuinely,
I don't think
like,
so. I think these are genuinely, like, kids' things, I think.
Okay, so is Five Nights at Freddy's supposed to be okay for kids to play, like, or not?
I'm not sure. Honestly, I don't know. And
it's weird,
you know what?
It?
I'm never going to find out either because I don't really care either. I don't know how. It's like the hype of something that gets kids obsessed with it. It's crazy. Like,
I don't know whether you're just being grumpy around it for the sake of being grumpy around it, though, because like you're like a grumpy dad. I'm like that though sometimes. Like,
a grumpy dad.
Yeah.
I just feel like there's like better things that he could be into.
He should be into Star Wars. I mean, watching like, you know, Anakin getting like burned in a fire and killing children.
Well,
you know,
not
like,
that.
Oh,
maybe
sure.
not that specific part. Like,
and like Luke having his hand cut off and all that stuff. Yeah,
just like pretty cool. Like, you know, it's probably better than Five Nights at Freddy's.
I guess there's fairly horrifying bits in Star Wars though, like for a kid. You know, mild horror.
Yeah.
You know what? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I should just fucking embrace Five Nights at Freddy's and get him into it. I'll just subject him to all of the fucking screaming man children on YouTube who play it and stuff, and fucking buy him the toys and shit, and let him go to school and talk about it, and maybe he can fucking enlist some other kids into it and stuff as well. That's
For former little Five Nights at Freddy's cult.
Hell yeah. Why not?
It sounds fantastic. I think you should just...
That's the problem. You can raise your kid as well as you like, but some other piece of shit out there will raise their kid to be a real son of a bitch with no hope, and your kid will befriend that person, and your kid will be corrupted. That's
yeah,
it.
To be like a corrupt, like a fell, my fell child. Like, yeah, and it's all thanks to this other kid's older brother who was obsessed with Five Nights at Freddy's. But no, I know it's just interesting how obsessed they can get about things.
Yeah.
That they know literally nothing about. Like, I guess they just like the idea of it, or maybe they like that, you know, that their friend tells them about it or whatever. But
yeah,
it's such a powerful thing that they want to like get like toys of it and stuff, and they just don't know, you know, like he's never seen anything to do with it. Like I think he'd actually probably be a bit scared if he watched
terrified.
It.
Kids are weird, the stuff they get into. It's weird. You can't really predict it.
It's really weird. But like, because there's a gap, my daughter is still very small. She's like 17 months old. So, and she's just starting to now recognize characters like on, you know, CBeebies or whatever. So we generally still have that on all the time sort of thing, because she can't really watch
the
anything
older
else.
Shows
so.
Are too much, but yeah.
So my son like complains about it a little bit. You know, he's like, oh fuck, I don't want to watch it in the Night Garden or whatever. But then when it's on, he's just like, watching it.
I mean, my two are a little older. So I've got one is five and a bit and the other one is nearly eight. So they're a little closer. Like, they can play together now for hours perfectly happily. And they can watch the same shows and stuff like that.
Nice.
The younger one kind of has to try and keep up a bit. But I think that's a good thing. Like, it's good for her to have to keep up. The older one explains shit to her anyway, so it's like, it's cool.
Yeah.
They do still sometimes watch, like if they've got the remote, they'll sometimes go to the baby channel, which is literally, I don't know who the fuck makes this stuff. Some poor animator somewhere who's just like, oh God. So,
man, you poor animator, my ass. You know how many fucking views this shit gets on YouTube? Like, these people are minted making like baby shows and nursery rhymes and stuff.
I guess they
fuck
are.
Me. It's
You're
crazy.
Right. You're right.
It's just nuts.
It's like those toy unboxing channels where all they do is buy a toy and just open the box and they get like 5 million views.
More than that. Some of those have like fucking 200 million views. It's insane. It's just nuts. Yeah. I think it's the culture now. Like, everybody's got an iPad or some sort of tablet at home, and everybody uses them now to like, you know, just control their kids somewhat. Like, if they need a minute to like do the dishes or... they need to make a phone call or something, you just shove your kid on a tablet and say, oh, here,
I hate that. You see these people on the plane rhymes. And they just stick their kids are there. Or any, I mean, I see people, they're getting in the car and the moment the kid gets in the car, they, iPad. They're like, yeah, so there's two kids in the backseat with the iPad. When we go for a drive, we're listening to music, we're talking, and, you know, we try to have a conversation. We don't just give them a fucking iPad. And the thing is, they can go, like, my kids will go 2-3 hours in a car, no problem, because they've never had to be... Like, we've never gone for this whole, we better entertain them. If they act up, you just tell them to shut up and sit still. Like, I always say, I will stop this car and leave you on the side of the road. And they believe me. Yeah, and I would do it.
We're the same. We don't really have, like, anything that we hook them into sort of thing. But, like...
I don't like it.
Occasionally, like, if they're, you know, especially, like, when they're really young, right? Like, my daughter is still, like, really young. So, like, she wants to walk places now.
Right.
If she's got it in her mind that she's walking somewhere and you're trying to get her into like her buggy or like into a car seat or something like that, and she just fucking starts screaming, sometimes you have to have something.
Oh yeah, you need something.
Like,
for that.
You need like a bartering tool. But luckily, it's never like a phone or an iPad or whatever. Usually, we just have like a snack or something that we bring along
give them
with
some
us.
Food. That's the thing.
Yeah. And sometimes it's like, you know, it's like. Like grapes cut in half, but we make it look more interesting by like putting it into like a container that's got like two lids and stuff like
that.
So then she's like, just stops dead in her tracks. Yeah. Oh man, fucking kids! Like they're tricky sometimes.
They're funny,
but you do develop like lots of techniques and stuff.
Oh yeah,
like along the way.
You know that's the other thing my kids like watching. Talking about like behavior and stuff. You know, Super Nanny.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember that show?
Yeah,
they love it. Because my kids are both, like, genuinely, I'm not bragging, I'm just being honest. They are so fucking well-behaved, it's ridiculous. My kids are incredibly well-behaved, mainly because I'm a strict dad, right? And I watched Super Nanny before I had kids, and I was like, fuck yeah, these kids are going to get disciplined to shit. Like, there's no fucking around. These kids are going to be well-behaved. And you see these parents, and they're so well-meaning. They're like, I don't want to tell them off because I don't want them to hate me. And you're like, geez, that's I get that. That's like a natural reaction. Yeah. Or I just want them to, you know, I'm worried that one day they'll grow up and they'll leave. That was another thing that one of the moms said, and she was very tearful. So she, like, babied her kids excessively because she wanted to be useful to them. She had four kids. She knew she wasn't going to have any more kids. And the idea... I mean, it was so wonderful for her having those kids. She loved it so much. She couldn't let go. And Super Nanny comes in. She's like, stop all this bullshit. Your kids are getting older. You've got to start treating them like that. And she was really crushed. But so my kids watch this. They're like fascinated to see these badly behaved kids. Like, there was this one kid. They put her in the naughty step area. She pulled this drawer out of this cupboard in the hallway and just smashed it to pieces like a barbarian. On the floor, just like that. And Super Nanny was like, just let her do it. And I was like, I would be in there whipping that kid's ass if she did that.
Oh, but my God. Yeah, there'd be no dinner, locked in the garage, like everything. I'd be pissed.
It was it was something else. But she was like, don't raise your voice. I was like, geez, I've been doing it wrong all this time. Because I'll shout at my kids if they fuck up. I'll be like, what are you doing? You know, like my daughter the other day.
We never need to raise our voices. Like my wife has the fucking death stare down pat.
Oh, wow.
Like,
I wish they know that.
Like, they fucking know. Like, if she gets pushed too far or whatever, stare comes out, and even I'm like, I gotta go to the bathroom for like 2 hours, I'm out of here, sort of thing.
God.
So that works. And also, we do like the countdown. So, like, it's like the threat of some sort of punishment.
You
sort
don't
of thing.
Even need
so
to say what you count. You just start to go, right,
I
five.
Don't. I just start four. Counting. Yeah.
They
sometimes
panic.
I do it from like 20, and they just start going crazy. Yeah. Like, if they're being too loud or something, I'm like, 19, 18.
Yeah, but they do that thing where they dance on the spot. Their feet are moving and they're just still like, they don't know what to do. He's counting. He's counting. They sort of run in circles. They like, what are we doing? How have we fucked up? We got to salvage this situation.
It's like they're in an airplane seat plummeting towards the ground. Yeah.
You can thank me later, society. You can thank me later. My kids are going to be, they're going to grow up and they're going to be great.
Just don't count
really
around
unhinged.
Them. It's the one
just
thing.
Just don't count around. Count. Yeah, it might trigger them, but otherwise,
oh my God, in the gym, they're just gonna be like
doing reps.
15,
15, 14. They're just like fucking freaking out. Oh man, there's lots of cool techniques though. Like there's lots of fun ways that you can be a parent and you can keep your kids on the straight and narrow.
Yeah,
like through counting games. And bribery, corruption,
but
extortion.
The fact that the same shit will almost always work with different kids. Like, they're all so uniform out of the box. They're just like this cut and paste. Blep, here's a person.
Yeah.
They're doing this. Oh, try this. Oh, that fucking worked. Who knew? Everybody has a very similar model car. There may be some differences, but, you know, the mechanic can just be like, yeah, just tweak the carburetor. And yeah, that actually did work. Like, kids are pretty straightforward. You just need to learn those techniques. It's kind of funny.
Yeah. Man, I have no time for other people's kids, though.
Oh, like, fuck that noise.
I don't want to fucking know. Like, they come up and they talk to me, so I'm just like, whatever. I'm not.
You just put the hand out. No.
Yeah.
Not interested.
Where's your mother, Jimmy? Go tell somebody who gives a shit, Jimmy. It's not me.
That's the thing. My kids would love to have more play dates, but I'm like, oh, geez, I'd have to have someone else's kid around here.
Those are fucking awkward. I took my son to a birthday party, and this woman was like, oh, you know, your son and my son, they get on so well. It's so sweet, isn't it? It's like, oh, yeah, I know. It really is, like, watching them play and stuff. And she's like, you know, we should set up a play date one time. I was like,
We have leprosy.
Oh, God, we're
busy.
We
have leprosy. Oh. Don't come around.
Oh,
yeah.
Geez. I mean, we are busy. Like, we have a lot of shit to do. Sorry. Yeah, it's awkward. Like,
it is
like,
tough.
And there's not really any way to make it not awkward either. Because the only thing you have in common with this person that you know of is that you've both created life and now you're sustaining that life that you created. Like, you know, they might be into some really weird shit. Like, they might have musical taste that really offends you, or maybe, you know, they might be racist and you don't know it yet and stuff. Like, there's lots of risks involved with the dates, I think.
And then they have to come around to pick up the kid, and they're in your house, this person you barely know, and they're like nosing around, judging your house. You're like, geez.
I hate that too. You got to tidy up a little bit too, because you don't want them to think that you're slovenly, but like, you know, you're just like, when you have a house that's filled with kids, like it's not a beautifully clean.
It's going to be messy.
House,
there's going to be
it?
Shit everywhere.
Yeah, that's
it's
it.
A dump.
Yeah, it's not a dump. Lewis.
It's not a dump. On. It's just lived in by
Man,
people.
Fucking spend a day in my shoes and then call your house a dump, okay?
Man. You're so sassy. I quite like this new sassy Lewis.
I wouldn't
want to
get into your shoes because they're probably full of fucking baby sick.
He
Jesus
doesn't say anything
Christ.
For 10 minutes. He's like, it's a dump. Just
hey, that's one thing that I'm lucky. I don't know about you, Flax, but my kids are not sickly. Like, they don't barf.
No,
like, they
they're
never
not,
have.
Not too much. Barely at all. I mean, but yeah. If it happens, it's rare. They're not. I mean, yeah. They do get sniffles and things. And the thing is, when my kids are sick, they go into this sort of cocoon. They just crawl into bed and just lie there for 2 days, and then they're fine. Like, that's their sickness. Yeah. Like, yeah. I got the same thing they had, and I was laid up for a week, like, feeling like fucking death. And they were just like, yeah, just give me a couple of days. I'll just rest this off, stick the telly on. They just lie there in bed completely still for like
some
2 days.
Kids,
boom, ready.
Some kids are really Ralphy, though, like projectile, like, you know, drop of a hat sort of thing. But
that happens at my daughter's school because the younger one, she'll come home and she'll say, Joseph was sick today. I was like, really? She's like, I was like, what, you mean he wasn't in school? No, he was sick in the classroom. I was like, wow, okay. And she said, yeah, and he was sick on another boy. I was like, oh my God. Like this kid, man. I can just imagine standing there just
and
like,
he was sick on the teacher.
Sick on another kid. I was like, and what did the other kid do? Oh, he was okay. It was only his shoe. I was like, so he's sick on another kid's shoe? Yeah, so he had to walk around barefoot for the rest of the school day. But
man,
he was okay.
It's no joke being sick at school, though. I remember one time when I must have been 11 or 12. We had a school that, in the suburbs, like, exploded right in the 80s.
Yeah.
Like they sprawled and sprawled and sprawled and sprawled. So what happened was in a lot of the schools in the suburbs was they'd have like a whole new development of houses, but you're talking like hundreds of houses, right?
Right.
And then all of a sudden, the minute they were done, boom, like they would fill up with people, right? And all those people were mostly families with kids, and those kids would have to go to school, right? But the schools couldn't really accommodate for them because the schools were like a set size, designed for the population of the suburbs at the time it was built, which is like 15 years before this and stuff. So what happened was we had a lot of like portables, like, you know, those classes, like they're like mobile classes almost. They were just like these boxes, and like a big truck could just like bring them in and set them up like outside of the school, like in a field. So we had tons of these like portable classes. Like we must have had like 10 or 15 of them. And they were classrooms, but you just had to walk outside to them, and they had like these little steps and go up into them. And they were just these boxes like raised up off the ground that had electricity and everything in them and stuff as well. But they were like really sort of isolated, like contained like little units. So, and there was like 30 people in my class. And one day my friend Mike got sick in class, okay? And he barfed all over the floor. It was really, really gross. And it stunk super bad. And they had to come in. They had to evacuate the portable that we were in. And we had to go like finish our lesson in another class. And they had to like decontaminate the portable. And they had to put some stuff down. And I'm not even joking, for the rest of the year, I think the rest of the time I was at that school, that particular portable just stunk of barf. It was
Jesus.
Unbelievable. It was overwhelming. Like, I felt like puking every time I went into it. And I had like three classes in that thing like every day. And it was the worst. Like, you'd get used to it after you were in it for a while. But then if you went outside like to go to the bathroom or something and then you came back, it would hit you all over again. It was like getting hit repeatedly by a train 50 times throughout the day. It was awful. God, it was so bad. I don't know what happens. Like, maybe it's like the stomach acid or something just gets stuck in in the fibers of the carpet. I don't
so
know,
bad.
But
they
can't
they do
get
at
rid
this
of that smell.
They remove the carpet tiles that the kids have been sick on, and they just bin them. They're just gone. Like, they have the storeroom full of carpet tiles. When the kids are sick, they just like cut the carpet tiles out. They're gone. Put a new one down. That's it. Because otherwise the stink never leaves. And kids are sick all the time.
Right.
All the time.
Thinking back, portables were fucking hilarious. Like, we had this guy called JJ. He was like, I'm not even joking. We were like 12. dude was like 20, okay? He failed school like over and over and over again, okay? And he was just like lingering around like a stale old fart. He was much older than us, and he was really fucking funny. Like, and if you had a class with him, he was super disruptive. He would like make fun of like teachers and stuff. And I remember this one time we were in class and we were in a portable, and he was like, Miss, can I need to go to the bathroom really bad. It's an emergency. Can I go to the bathroom? And she's like, yeah, okay, JJ, go to the bathroom. And because there's no bathrooms in these portables, right? So you'd have to leave the portable, go outside, go into the school building to go to the bathroom.
Hmm.
So he leaves the portable, okay, to go to the bathroom. And we look outside, like in like to the soccer field, and fucking JJ is just like pegging it, like running around the soccer field, like screaming, like arms like flailing in the air, running around and stuff, and like everybody's just sort of like stifling a laugh. I'm just like, oh god, that guy, JJ's outside, like running around and stuff, and the teacher's still trying to teach and everything, and everybody's like, oh god, like laughing, and then somebody just bursts out laughing, like it was just too much, trying to like contain the laughter, and then everybody's laughing. And the teacher's like, what's going on? And JJ's outside. She looks outside. Fucking JJ's still going for it, just running around, like he's just like, oh fuck this class, man. I'm just gonna run around. Fuck. It was so funny.
He got so far into the school system, he already knew the punishments don't mean shit. Like, expelling him at this point would be a mercy. He was like, do it.
Oh,
do what you want.
It was so funny. Just running around and stuff. Oh, man.
Just wants the sweet release of expulsion.
Oh shit. I love moments like that at school. You know, like those moments when somebody would say something really funny and you're not meant to laugh. You're trying to like keep it under wraps, but you can't. Shit, that was really good. Fucking JJ, man. I wonder what he's up to now. He's
JJ.
Probably in jail.
He's probably homeless or in jail. Yeah.
Fucking hell. Holy
you don't
shit.
Come back
school's
from that.
School's a big part of our kind of upbringing, and I think I'd say it was quite interesting to think about when. So it's one of the reasons I think I liked reading Harry Potter, right, back in the day. It was because it was set at school and it felt like it had all those kind of schooly memories and things. It reminded you a lot of the good times of being at school.
But did you used to have to wear a uniform and stuff at school?
Oh, yeah.
We never had any of that.
Proper smart blazer and a little cap, some shorts, you know.
Yeah, my uniform was a Chicago Bulls starter jacket with a Chicago nice. Bulls starter baseball cap and Nike Airs. We didn't have uniforms. We were just like, we were allowed to wear whatever.
Did they still have the cane when you were at school, P-Flex?
Yes, when I started primary school, that was they were phasing out the cane around then, so this was like 85 they were, and the headmaster Mr. Laird, this
we're
was at my
phase
primary
out of
school
the cane.
We're phasing it out. He brought like there were three of us that were, I can't remember what we're doing, we're fighting or something,
we're transitioning from the cane to the slipper, it's more appropriate.
So we went in and he had it up on his wall on like, it was like above his desk, there was like these two hooks and his cane was resting in there like a gun. Right? Like, you know, the way hunters have a rifle over there. They're sort of there. So he had this cane there. He said, boys, I have not had to use that cane for 5 years. Do not make me use it now. We were like, oh my God, he's going to fucking beat us to death with the cane. So we were all like, yes, sir, we won't do it again. But by the time I got to secondary school, the cane was gone. And the teachers were obviously pretty salty about this because it was a boys' school and they thought whipping us was about the only thing that really stopped boys just doing whatever they wanted. So they just took to throwing things at us instead. Like, they'd throw chalk, board rubbers, stuff like that. Now, interestingly enough, I was talking about when I went to Bournemouth School, which was the name for the school, Bournemouth School. It's like the least thought has gone into that name for a school. It is literally called Bournemouth School. That's it.
It's just like a total afterthought. We didn't name the school.
Yeah, it's just like, what are we going to call this school? It's in Bournemouth. Let's just call it Bournemouth School. So there was a kid who, he's not that young, emailed me about a month ago saying, I went to the same school as you. He was a lot younger than me. He was there in the 2000s. And he was saying to me, like, there were teachers that taught me that were still at that school. There was a guy there, Mr. Hawkins, who not only taught me and this kid recently, he taught my dad and my uncle when they were at that school. So he had been there for fucking 50 years or something stupid like that, teaching at that one school, which was kind of insane. But they still threw chalk and board rubbers at people. And there were teachers that were still teaching there that taught when I was there, when I was 11, back in the 80s. Fuck. They were still teaching at that school and still chucking shit at kids. I mean, honestly, if you did some kind of investigation into Bournemouth School, you'd be like, this school is like 50 years out of date. Why are they still chucking board rubbers at kids? But they did.
Oh, man. I read an obituary for one of my teachers, my primary school teachers.
Right.
It was a couple years ago. So, like, somebody I went to school with sent it to me. And they're like, hey, fuck you. You'll never believe it. Like, this guy, he passed away. And I read it and I was like, oh shit. And like, you know, you read about this, you know, he was my teacher for like a whole year.
Yeah.
And man, the memories just came flooding back. It was crazy.
Yeah.
And then I sort of remembered that like, it wasn't really that great. Like, he was kind of mean spirited and stuff like that. So it was like, I wasn't like actually upset or anything, but it was just kind of weird to read that, like, you know, somebody you knew and you spent some time with or whatever had passed away. But
yeah,
it's weird too, because like I found out later on, like people that I'd gone to school with, like, I don't know if you guys have ever had this, but like I was talking to like a friend of mine the other day and I was like, oh, whatever fucking happened to Corey? He's like, fuck, Corey's dead, man. What? Really? He's like, yeah, he fucking died in a car crash like 3 years ago. What? I couldn't believe it.
Man.
And it's just like completely, you lose touch with these people. Like they just disappear into this like time vacuum where you just assume that they're still doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Like that where you left them off. And then, you know, you find out all these people have obviously moved on with their lives. Like a lot of people get married, have kids, move away from the place that you used to live in and stuff, myself included. But it was really shocking to hear that like this guy that I kind of knew and kind of hung out with from time to time, just like I'd completely lost all touch with him. I didn't know what he was up to or anything. And then he died in a car crash. Yeah,
it's weird when you hear about how much people's lives have changed that you knew a long time ago, but it's also kind of weird and kind of scary when you know that someone that you knew like 30 years ago is still doing the same thing that they were. Like their life has not changed.
Yeah.
In the whole time that you've been living and doing all this different stuff, you look back and you're like, wow, you're still doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
Even now, like you're still doing that. Like, yeah.
Still teaching at the same school, like, doing the same, probably wearing the same fucking clothes, the same cardigan sweater and shit that they were wearing back then too. Like it probably hasn't changed much. Yeah, it's nuts. But like your life, you sort of like settle into a life in your midlife, I guess, right?
Mm.
And
I so guess, like when
we
I
were
mean,
when we were kids, these teachers were probably just like pushing 30 or whatever. And then, you know, if they didn't want to move on and get another job or whatever, you know, and that was their career and they were there, then odds are they're probably still there and they're probably going to retire from there doing the same thing. It's nuts to think, isn't it?
I'm not sure that people like the current generation that's working will really live that way. I don't think people do that as much now. I mean, I know my mom and my dad are always saying that the whole job for life thing is kind of gone. I mean, that doesn't exist anymore.
I think everybody's just going to be a YouTuber or a streamer or,
God,
you know, an Instagram god or whatever. And yeah. Nobody wants, they're like a lot of these like jobs, like teaching, like nursing and stuff. Like nobody wants to fucking do those jobs anymore.
Yeah.
Like
I think a lot of employment is more transitory and kind of, I mean, you know, the 0-hour contracts and people being self-employed. And I just think, I think people are being a bit less stuck in the same place. But the weird thing is it's easy to keep in touch with people because of all, you know, your Facebooks and emails and stuff. So you kind of have a better idea of what everybody's doing. But everybody's
kind of... Yeah, but man, think about it. Like, people must think that of us to some point now. Like, a lot of people would have watched, like, Lewis and Simon playing Minecraft and stuff when they were, like, 13. And now that they're, like, 19, they might come back and be like, fuck, they're still doing YouTube stuff. I can't believe it. All this time, I've got hair all over my dick now. I didn't have any back then. And a lot's changed for me. And these guys are still doing the same shit. Can't believe it.
Yeah,
I'm totally into vaping and choking now. I've changed a lot.
I had a whole ordeal where I survived a plane crash and made my way through the Amazon. I load up YouTube and there's Lewis and Simon playing Minecraft again. Jeez, it's nothing changes. Oh man.
Shit.
I'm in Bristol next week, you know. I'm in Bristol next week. I'm coming down on Monday.
We'll record the podcast from Bristol next week.
Yeah.
We could be on the road. That'll be sweet. I'm looking forward to that. Let's have a, have we got a bodega?
We have a bodega.
The bodega?
We do.
It's a longin. It's a longin,
apparently.
It's
a 2.5 pager. Okay.
They're normally two pages.
I try to keep it to 2 pages, which is kind of tricky, but I've made it 2.5.
Let me adjust myself slightly here. Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Bodega.
I'm ready.
Part 19.
What about 19 Areno? How about adding Areno to the end
19
of...
Areno.
Sweet.
Kaitos had been born, for want of a better word, on the planet Sigil, at the same time as all the other Sigilese beings in the galaxy. All the Sigilese that had ever been or would ever be were created then, in a single moment, fully formed and conscious. One moment the universe wasn't there, the next it was, and the Sigilese were too. All their houses, roads, a sewer system, socialized medicine, and education, and really good internet. It was like Sweden suddenly existing. It was this infinitely unlikely double event that led the Sigilese to believe that they were special, extremely special. So special, in fact, that their creation was even less likely than the creation of the universe itself. Imagine a cake suddenly popping into existence out of nothing. That's pretty unlikely. Now imagine that same cake popping into existence, covered in icing and sprinkles and the words, "Good luck in your new job, Steve, love mum," written on it. That's even less likely. The Sigilese were the icing on the cake, and they knew it. This also asks some pretty big questions. For example, what the flav? This was a common question among scientists when confronted with the Sigilese problem. If the universe kind of made sense, the Sigilese really, really didn't, and it caused a huge rift in the scientific community that lingered to this day. Some concluded that the Sigilese creation story was a myth, that they just happened to be one of the oldest civilizations around, but carbon dating of early Sigilese artifacts proved it. They were as old as the universe, to the nanosecond, in fact. Because of their self-appointed status as the most improbable and therefore most important race around, the Sigilese were almost insufferable in their egotism. Some people were proud to be tall or strong, some were proud of their race's grand history of conquest or exploration. The Sigilese just figured that their creation alone was much more than anything anyone else could really come up with, so they paraded around wearing jewelry older than some people's solar systems. Some of them even had pairs of jeans older than people's galaxies. If you tried to reminisce near a Sigilese, you'd better be prepared to have your anecdote trumped into the next dimension. Naturally, many people believed the Sigilese to be proof of the existence of a divine creator. I mean, come on, they would say. If that's not proof, then what the flav would be? And they were kind of right. It was nuts. But the Sigilese did not believe in God. The idea that there was something out there even fancier than them was just ridiculous. And the idea that God would create a race of people who didn't believe in him at all sealed the deal for many scientists. This was just one of those weirdo things that happens in an infinite universe. End of story. Kaitos was approximately 13 billion years old. He'd done everything he ever needed to do, satisfied every desire, and achieved more than any non-Sigilese being could ever achieve. The list was so long it would take around 1 billion years just to read it. Kaitos, of course, had spent 1 billion years, around 5 billion years ago, running through all the things he'd ever done and recording this on a series of long-life crystal storage devices. But the crystals had decayed around 1 billion years later, and he just couldn't be flavved to start again. He'd also realized no non-Sigilese would ever live long enough to read even 1% of what he'd written down, so what was the point? And so, like all old people, Kaitos had started volunteering a lot. He had the free time, he didn't need money since his bank account had 13 billion years worth of interest in it, and his kids were so grown up they were older than 90% of the known universe. When that young pup, Bodega, had approached him asking for help, Kaitos had said yes instantly, even though what Bodega had asked him was so trivial to Kaitos that it barely deserved his attention. The late era Kaitos turned no friend down, no matter the request. It was hard enough to make friends anyway when you knew you'd outlive them by billions of years, so he clung to the ones he did have. As requested, Kaitos parked in his unbelievably cool ship in Krem Slum Dump's home system, Gurk, in orbit around the lush green Gurk 1. Krem wasn't home, but Majesta was, and Kaitos was the one who had introduced her to Bodega. He was here to clear the air between the two errant lovers, since it was too dangerous for Bodega to come to Gurk himself. Kaitos reached out with his mind, knowing Majesta would hear his thoughts. Within minutes, a sleek blue vessel span up gracefully from the planet below and positioned itself alongside Kaitos' ship. Majesta materialized on his bridge a moment later. "You don't need the ship, do you?" he asked her. "No, of course not, but I like the ceremony of it," she said, looking around and smiling. Kaitos admired her perfect beauty. She was tall, yet delicate. Her hair was so thick it looked like a few dozen birds could easily nest in it. Her breasts and buttocks seemed locked in a battle to outdo one another, and her face was so perfect it was hard to look directly at it. Warm and loving, but also aloof and haughty. When she smiled, it seemed that no other achievement was worth striving towards. Kaitos had long ago given up on love. He'd had trillions of lovers, but Majesta, she was something else. Naturally, Kaitos would wait until after Bodega had died before making a move, and he'd wait a good few millennia after that just to be polite. "Do your psychic powers work on me?" asked Kaitos playfully. He knew full well that Sigilee's minds were impenetrable. "Only when you want them to," she said distractedly. "I'm here because," began Kaitos, but Majesta silenced him, pressing a perfect finger to his lips. "I know. Bodega's mind is open to me, and I sense his every thought and every action. Unfortunately." "He does love you, doesn't he?" asked Kaitos. Majesta began walking around Kaitos' ship, running her hand over its ridiculously ergonomic surfaces. "Kaitos, you're older than I am, but we share something. A curiosity that extends beyond our powers, or in your case, your longevity. Bodega loves me, of course, but he's very confused." "He is, and I am too, actually," said Kaitos, frowning. "Tam was a mistake. Our child wasn't. Bodega didn't want children, and I did." "What about Krem?" asked Kaitos. "I'm seeing where that goes for now. Bodega sees people through their actions, as most do. I don't." She stood with her back to Kaitos, staring at Gurk 1 through the viewport. "I know every facet of someone's personality the moment I meet them. Every lie they tell themselves, all the things they regret and the things they don't, but should. For a long time, I held off reading Bodega's mind because I wanted to experience love the way others do. But eventually, I became curious. One night, while he slept, I journeyed into Bodega's mind, and what I found was, well, it scared me." "What was it?" asked Kaitos, genuinely intrigued for the first time in around 15,000 years. "That's private," said Majesta, admonishing Kaitos with the gentlest of glances that still crushed his spirit more deeply than the time he'd accidentally landed his ship on a Dildonian school bus. "I must know," he said, taking a half step forwards. "I will not tell you, save to say that the universe and Bodega have much in common. I knew that the more time I spent with Bodega, the more I'd become lost in his complexities. I wanted to spend time with more simple men, to enjoy their lack of depth." "That seems awfully unfair," said Kaitos, sitting down in his chair and tapping in a new course. "You're leaving?" asked Majesta. "I came here for my friend, to ask why. That's what he'd requested, just that." "Ask her why," said Kaitos, turning in his seat to face Majesta. Looking up at her this way made her seem so imperious and alluring that Kaitos decided to shave a millennia or two off his polite waiting time. "I asked why, and the answer I will return with is that Bodega is too much for you. You can't handle that man," he said. Majesta's face contorted into something like anger for a moment, so subtle that Kaitos almost missed it. She vanished from the bridge, and her ship blasted back towards the planet's surface. Kaitos would return to Bodega with a message. He would tell Bodega that, eventually, she would be his again. No woman can resist a man she cannot change. The end.
Nice. Oh my god.
Oh god.
I love Lewis's string of reactions. Oh my god, that was a good one, man. That was really good. I like that a lot.
It's excellent. Thank you very much, P-Flex.
My pleasure.
Ah, okay. With that, we're going to end the Travels podcast here. Thank you for listening, everyone. See you next week.
Peace.
Have a good one.
Bye.